Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest edition of Remarkable Women, the podcast. I am Nick Devlin, also known as Mahita Ashaya, and I'm going to say more about that in a second. And today we have Marion. I'm going to start here and say I am beyond excited to speak to Marion for many, many reasons. And just before we started to record, Marion said, "Hannah, how are you?" And I said, "Quite frankly, Marion, I'm a little bit tired because I've been awake since 4 o'clock. super excited to record this session. I do know, Marion, that there are many people who are as excited as me to meet you because you're pretty famous in our world. More about that probably to come." And also to hear and to hear what you've got to say. So for those who have just tuned in, the conversation today is going to be a monk, which is me. I'm Mahita Ashaya, a monk, and Marion, who is a retired minister, talking about all things dying and death. And a couple of things I just wanted to say before we start. The first thing to say is that we're not showing up as experts. This is simply our personal experiences. And it was interesting, actually, when I was thinking about my personal experiences with dying and death, I was like, wow, actually, there's a lot. There's been suicides. My dad committed suicide, a cousin did too. And actually, I think there's new terminology now. We don't actually say committed suicide. Maybe we'll talk about that. There's been unexpected deaths. I was the first person on a hit and run accident where the person died in my arms. There's been slow dying. There's been fast dying. There's been occasions when I've been with people as I've been dying, and occasions when I've had a phone call. There's been work in hospices. And yeah, I sat with that and I thought, I bet that's not even scratching the surface, Marion, of the number of experiences that you've had. So I'm delighted to get together with you. I'm going to say to those of you who are listening or watching, both Marion and I are coming at this with a complete blank piece of paper. In full disclosure, we had a conversation beforehand. We started talking and we said, you know what, scrap all that. We've got so much to talk about that we said, you know what, let's just get on a recording and share. So my intention for this time, and we're going to spend about 40 minutes together, is to start a narrative. One of the things that I'm really passionate about, and I know you are too, Marion, is to bring the conversation alive, or even to have the conversation about dying and death. It feels like it's one of those things that actually we don't talk about. Yeah. It's a secret, or it's something that we only start to speak about when actually we're in the middle of it, or we know that it's coming. So the intention around the conversation today is to bring a narrative around that. And also, what was so clear to me last time, and every time we've spoken actually, is a couple of things. One, you forget what you know when you've had an experience.
Yes, you do.
And certainly what I've seen is, from speaking to you many times, is there's gold here. There's gold to be able to say, if we share this, does this help? And so my other intention in this conversation for those people who are listening is to say, listen, not for the sadness, listen for the stories, for the joy, and for what might be useful for you one day, or for somebody else that you know. I do want to say that I have already got my tissues. So for those of you who know me, I do wear glasses, but I did actually think this morning, will I wear glasses? So have your tissues ready, because it's surprising actually, isn't it? Sometimes it just catches you out.
Touches.
It does, it touches. So with them, let's just dive in. So okay. When I said that, Marion, before, like, gosh, when I think about all of my experiences with people who are dying, I can only imagine how many experiences you've had.
Mm-hmm. Well, As a professional, if you like, I've been called in to conduct the funerals of lots of people. Some of the people I would never have met, so I don't know anything about them. And other people I do know, I have known, and I've been called in to go and minister to them before they've passed away, and with their families who are in the midst of the chaos that death can sometimes bring into a family or a household. And so sometimes you go in and everything is all beautiful and lovely and everybody's all prepared for this end of life thing. And then there are other things where perhaps death has come quickly or suddenly, and as you mentioned earlier, totally unexpectedly. And people are just in a flurry. They don't know what's going to happen next. They don't understand exactly what's happening now. And somehow or other, you have to kind of steer them through that. It's interesting because I've been called in to say, even to people that I've not known very well, mum's in hospital, she's not expected to survive, please will you come in? And so you go in and there's a whole gathering of the family around the bedside, and somehow or other you have to be able to speak into that. So that's one kind of thing. The other kind of thing is where the person has already died and you are going in perhaps to plan and prepare for the funeral that's about to take place. But you've still got to listen to all the story that has led up to this moment. You've got to take the time to understand where these people are at this moment and what they've been through so that you can, well, because you want to empathize. You want to help them by understanding and listening carefully to their story. And some of them are harrowing. There's no question about it. Some of them are harrowing stories. Some of them are, you know, when someone's lived a very long life, sometimes people are saying, it's okay. They lived a long life. They lived a good life. We can't expect them to go on forever. And there's a kind of acceptance before they actually die that this is going to come anyway because they're very old and the end of life story is about to unfold. That's okay. So when they're horrible deaths, and I've been part of those when it's a baby, a murder, one of these horrendous diseases that people get these days, where their lives just taken away from them. We've got people who've, they don't die of dementia, but their families have lived with that story for a long time before the end actually comes. All of those kind of things that you have to deal with, and you never know. In many instances, I have never known until I've knocked on the door exactly what I'm going to deal with. So,
wow,
they're big things.
They're huge things. And wow. And in this time that we have together, I am deliberately and intentionally going to keep slowing down because I want to honor the people in those stories who are going to hear about.
Yeah.
And also I want to honor people who are watching or listening because I'm minded that for most people, they know somebody who has passed away. And so it feels really important to honor how all of our lives are connected often by a story of dying or death. So I want to make sure that we keep honoring the people who physically aren't here and yet are part of our lives.
Yeah.
And it also feels important to say actually that it's different again, I'm guessing right now, because the moment that in history that we're speaking, we're currently in a pandemic. Countries right across the world are experiencing a very different experience of whether they can even be with people in this period or even attend a funeral. And I'm minded in my own experience that one of the things I often say to people is, whether you know the person well or not, if it comes to you to get an invite to a funeral or you feel drawn to go to a funeral, go. Yeah. Because I know in my own experience, it's felt so important to honor that life, to celebrate that life, and in my own way to say goodbye. And sometimes all I've done is I've slipped in the back of the church and just been with the service and the person, yes. And then I've left again. And so I always say that to people, if you get a chance, please don't let work get in the way, make it important.
Yeah.
And so I'm deeply curious. We've had a couple during this period where I haven't been able to go to the funeral, but it's never been somebody who's been super close to me. And I'm really curious how it must be for people right now.
Yeah.
Another very distinctly different experience.
Yes. Absolutely. And I've not been involved in that this time round because I'm retired, but I have been involved. There's two bits to this that I think are quite fascinating, really. One is the desire for us as people alive to want to be with that person when they die. We have this kind of, I don't know, desire. I can't put it any other way. And if, for whatever reason, we are denied that, we feel that we've let them down. We weren't there for them. And I could tell you stories of people where, I mean, there's one family I particularly think of where I was called in because mum was in hospital, not expected to live long, and the family asked me to go. They were all daughters. There were four daughters and the husband. And they all stood around the bed, and the lady was lying in the bed, and I just talked to them for a few minutes, and then I just said a few prayers, and I said, I'm going to go now because I've done what I can do. I only live across the road from the hospital. If you need me again, call me and I will come back. And they said, fine, okay. So they said, we'll just walk you to the lift. So all of them walked me to the lift and I said my goodbyes and I went home, literally across the road from the hospital. As I walked in the door, the phone was ringing to say when they got back to the ward, she'd already died. So I had to say to them, this is a journey that this person has to go on their own. You cannot go with them. However much you want to be there, you cannot go with them. And this has happened on numerous occasions, not just a one-off. And it's almost as if the person knows they have to go on their own. And it's okay with them. It's us it's not okay with. They've got to go on their own. And so it was almost as if she had waited until they'd all gone.
So again, I just want to pause.
Yeah.
Because I have, yes. What an incredible story. And I just want to pick up on a couple of aspects that you've said there. I do, and again, perhaps I should have said at the beginning, none of this conversation is coming from a place of religion. Obviously, you've been like a former minister. I'm a monk with a spiritual faith myself, and we've been honest. This is our personal experience. I definitely have also had the sense that that people know. There's a sense that they wait until they are ready.
Yes.
And that there is a choice that is made at that point, which is, and now it's time. And I'm aware, for example, with that might feel controversial to people yes. listening, because I'm not saying for one second that people go that people necessarily are consciously aware of that.
Yeah.
But certainly in my experience with the people that I have been right at the end, there has been a moment where I have seen or experienced something that has had me know there's been a letting go.
Yeah.
It's time. There's been a letting go. And I certainly have had many experiences where in that space, I've heard other people or myself saying, it's okay.
Yeah.
I give you permission to go. It's okay to go. And absolutely. It feels like that for several people has been really important. Like the humans who are going to be left, in want for want of a better word, I've said it's okay and give permission, and the other person has been almost set free in order to be able to say it's time. And I love what you've just said there, that the, I think often we think about ourselves, the ones who are remaining, and we forget the choice that that other person is making, because they're at the start of another journey,
another thing. That's right. Yeah,
wow. And I can imagine how tough that might have been for that family to think. Yeah. Certainly, I've had experiences where people have like literally had vigils like all night, all day, all night, nip to the toilet, boom.
Gone. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, and there are other things about that denial of that presence at the end of life. And that's another story that comes to me, where I was called, I had a phone call one morning from the headmaster of a local school that I had some connections with. And he said, "Marion, we've had a really sad experience at school. One of our teachers has taken his own life." Mm. And this was a school for children with special needs. And he said, "We don't know how the children are going to respond." And he said, "What we don't want is mass hysteria, because if one of the children kick off, then we could have the whole school going, you know." Mm-hmm. He said, "I wonder if you could come in," he said, "and just talk to the staff about how we might best handle this." So I said, "Okay." So I went in and we made arrangements, and we had a really beautiful memorial service for this member of staff. And the children brought things that he had taught them, things that they had made during his lessons, and they had them all laid out. And we had a big screen up with and some music playing, and it was lovely. It was all part of this school and his life and contribution to the school. And then at the end of it all, we went out into the playground and let off balloons to say goodbye, which you wouldn't do now, because it's not acceptable, you know, to have balloons floating off. But anyway, that's what we did that day. I left, and the headmaster was really pleased that it had all gone well. The children had coped, they'd all contributed in their own way. And the following week I went in again to see how they were, and he said, "Marion, the most extraordinary thing happened." And he said, "We'll never be able to thank you for what you did that day." And I said, "Well, we all did it. We were all part of the story, you know." No, he said, "There's a little girl in one of our classes." He said, "She's had a really miserable life." He said, "She's Down syndrome. And she lost her mum. And she wasn't allowed to go to the funeral." And she said, "And she went to live with her nan, who looked after her." And she said, and he said, "And her nan has recently died. And this kid now is left, this child." He said, "And after you had gone, she went into the staff room to find her member of staff that she worked closest with. And she broke her heart. She absolutely broke her heart. And she said to her, 'Come on, it's all right.' She said, 'No, it's great. I'm just happy,' she said. And she's, 'Why all the tears?' And she said, 'Because when I let the balloon go, I said goodbye to my mum." And so there was that little thing for her. She couldn't be at the funeral. She was not permitted to go, because actually nobody wanted to take responsibility for her, because they didn't know how she would respond. And so that little symbolic act, which I thought was something that all of the children could take part in, for her was something else, something outside of what we'd been doing. But it touched her in a way that meant, "I could say goodbye to my mum today, when I never had the chance to say goodbye." And it was lovely. So those are the kind of things that maybe we need to be a bit more conscious of.
Yeah. Go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because like you said, there are some people whose funerals you didn't get to go to for whatever reason. Sometimes it's choice, sometimes it's circumstance, you can't manage. But there is a proper place for us somewhere to say goodbye. And for some of us, we have to find that place.
Yes, and what I'm deeply touched by is, again, the story of one of the stories, one of the threads perhaps of this story around how we don't talk about death or we don't talk about dying, and what in particular do we do when there's children involved. Yeah. And so it feels sometimes like it's almost like a taboo subject. We just don't talk about it until a granny or a granddad or whatever, you know. And mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. And I heard something this week actually, which was two things really. One, somebody saying that as you and I have talked about many times before, death is part of living.
Yes, absolutely.
Dying is part of living. And the conversation that I was part of this week with somebody was around, somebody was asked, what is the best time to start speaking to children about dying? And they were really clear, as early as four. Mm. As early as four. Because what they said was, it's adults who make it a thing. And when it becomes a thing, then it's really hard to talk about. But actually, from the age of four, if you can start to talk about it really lightly, there's an acceptance as a child that it's not something to be scared of or to be upset about necessarily, albeit that it is sad, but it's just something that happens. And what they said was, it's almost the parents' baggage that gets in the way. Of children being able to accept it. And then the other, which I'd love to hear your perspective on, and the other thing that somebody reminded me of was that, and again, I'd love your perspective on this, years and years and years ago, maybe well before your time as well, cemeteries used to be in the middle of the village. It was something that, as a family, you visited regularly. It was part of your day-to-day. Oh, there we go. You know, we're walking past the cemetery. But what they've said is, over the years, cemeteries have become a place where you go to. Yes. And again, it's where another subtle way that we're having death be something that's somewhere else.
Yes.
That it's not integrated into the idea that every single day is a day that we just happen to get to be alive.
Yes.
So I'd love to hear what you might think about that.
I think it's part of our what's happened in our culture over recent years is that we have pushed death away from us onto the professionals. Mm. Right. Years ago, if somebody was sick and dying, they'd be sick and dying at home.
Yeah.
And their family would muster. They would come round. They, like you said, they would have their vigils. There'd be Auntie so-and-so would come one night. You know, Mary, the sister, would come another day. And all of those sorts of things, they would take place in the heart of the family home.
Yeah.
And it would be rare for people to actually die in hospital. Mm-hmm. They would die, generally, they would die at home. And also, people would be laid out at home. Mm. There'd be somebody who lived in the road who would come and deal with the body itself. Mm. And they would wash it and they would prepare it and they would dress it and all that. And now suddenly does not happen anymore. It simply doesn't happen. And we've pushed sick and dying people off onto the medical profession and the caring profession. You can look after them. And we've pushed all the preparations around death and dying onto the professionals in terms of the undertakers. We don't do that anymore. We don't have. In Liverpool, which is where I live, it's a very mixed culture, but very often, even if the person has died in hospital, the body will be brought home and they will be in an open casket in the house so that everybody can come and pay their respects. Now that happens here a lot, and that wasn't something I was expecting when I first came into ministry. I would get a phone call to say, we would like you to come to the house and see my mother, you know, and you'd think, oh right, you know, and off you'd go, and suddenly there you would be presented with mother.
Wow.
So that's doesn't happen very in most places. I'm not saying it never happens anywhere.
And that's funny because that's also my experience as well. So my mother-in-law passed away last year, and my husband is part Irish, as you know, and that's exactly what happened to Teresa. She passed away at home. She was taken by the undertakers, but the family did have her back, and she was with us, I think, about 3 days. That's my first experience of that. No, second experience of that, actually. That had happened with my granddad, but it was literally just, I think it was the morning of the funeral.
The night before. Yeah.
But with Teresa, she literally was in the heart of the home. Like you could walk past her.
Yes.
And it was really strange. It was like, oh, okay, this is what we'll do then.
Yeah, so that's
apparently common in Ireland. They still do that a lot in Ireland.
Well, of course, Liverpool has a very big Irish community. I mean, it does anyway, but it's very mixed. But certainly that happened to me on a number of occasions, you know. And, you know, I mean, there's funny bits to it as well, because the household in one particular instance was that the old lady had died, the granny. And there she was lying, you know, in state, really, and her daughter. I smiled because it was so funny, and I had to keep a straight face. I had to be inscrutable and think, I've got to be proper about this, you know. And she said, and the daughter said, come and look at my mum. And I said, yeah, she looked lovely. And I went, yes, she does. That was her favourite pink cardigan, she said. And I said, oh, how lovely. She said, yeah, but doesn't she look well? And I thought, well, and so there is a bit of odd humour that pops up every now and again, and somehow or other you just have to kind of go with it.
You know, though, I get that. I do get that, because that might be another thing that's worth just mentioning here. I do. There is, for those people who, and I'm aware, actually, perhaps we should say this, not everybody is either comfortable seeing somebody who has
who has
died, or has seen somebody who has died. And there's many stories. I'm sure we could talk about that, because it absolutely isn't for everybody. And sometimes there can be some real differences. And yet I guess what I am minded when you said there about, doesn't she look well? Certainly, for example, with Teresa, I'm reminded that her journey with the brain tumor had been quite difficult. You know, like all of us, we carry tension in our
faces. Of course. Yeah, we do.
Tension in our faces. And what is so beautiful, I think, sometimes is, as somebody passes, that tension disappears.
Yes, it does.
You almost experience the peace that maybe they're experiencing, who knows, but something shifts on their faces. And it has been my experience sometimes seeing people once they've died that actually they do look well because that pain, that angst, maybe the fear, all of the human emotions that we carry on our faces has gone.
Yes, that's right.
And actually, there can be a wellness, as daft as that sounds, can't there? That is interesting. I never thought about it quite like that.
Yeah. So that's you know, they're just some of the things that, you know, but it's not the case for everybody. And I think that's what I would constantly want to say over and over again, is that each experience is different.
Yes.
It is unique to that person and to that situation and to that group of people who are concerned about the life of this person, and that it's now drawn to a close. They're so different because there are different personalities involved. There's a different history that comes into play. There's the different way in which people handle distress or grief. And that's reflected across the group, whoever you may be with. There are some people who take it on the chin, who are very matter of fact, very pragmatic. Well, you know, that's life, isn't it? kind of story. And there are others who are completely distraught by the whole experience of watching this person's life draw to its close. And it can be for any kind of reason. And somehow or other, you're drawn into that. You're just drawn into that whole plethora of experience that's presented. And you somehow or other have to pick your way through it. And what I found, and this may sound a bit bizarre, but during the course of meeting with families and having them share something of their life history with, there would always be something that was funny. There would always be a bit of the story that was a bit funny. And I used to deliberately use that funny thing because what I found was when you conducting a funeral, for instance, and you've maybe got, I don't know, say 40 people gathered together in the crematory particularly, and they're all sitting
there. Let's hope those days come back soon.
Yeah.
We can have 40 people together, you know, let's hope for that.
Yeah, and they're all mournful. They're all serious and very somber and heavy going, and it's really hard work holding the thing together. And then suddenly, and you know you're at a crossroads, they're either all going to burst into tears or they're not. And so I would try and introduce something that was something that everybody knew about but was funny. Everybody knew the story. And I would say, of course, so-and-so and so-and-so, this happened, didn't it? And suddenly it cracks like an egg and they just all burst out laughing. It's almost hysteria, actually. But it stops that real pain of intensity, and it just breaks the atmosphere. And I have said to people, it is all right to laugh because you would have laughed at it during her life. It's still the same story. It made you laugh then. It's all right to make you laugh now.
And I want to pick up on this because, you see, I knew there's so many places we can go. There's so many places we can go. So the one place I want to go first of all is that recognition, that exactly what you said. There may be one death, but actually in a family, there can be 12 different experiences.
Yes, that's right.
And often what we talk about is the one, but what we don't honour is the 12.
Yeah.
And I just want to express it in that way. And if we have more time at another session, just to dive into that, because I am aware that my own mum passed away with cancer, my husband's mum passed away with cancer, and our experiences on both occasions were very different.
Yeah.
Very, very different. And so I love what you said before, not one death is the same. And not one experience is the same. No. And I naively, I think, thought once I got over that, oh, please, please, Lord, not another one. I naively thought, well, I've been through this once. I never thought, well, you know what, this is going to be a slam dunk. You know, I've had this experience before. I never, ever thought that. But I did think in some way I've been prepared for this. Because yes. it was literally, you know, not very long before. And yet, still sideswept. Because the big difference for me the second time was the first time it was my mum.
Yes.
It was my mum. I could make the decisions. I'm a solo child. So apart from supporting my dad, I had a role to play in, I want it to go like this.
Yes.
But of course, as much as I adored Teresa, as my mother-in-law, she wasn't my mum. And I was then tucking into, but it was Andy's mum, and what does he want?
He want, yeah.
An entirely different experience.
Yes, that's right. And of course, even Andy's not an only child, is he?
Exactly right. He's not, no, he has
a
brother.
He was part of a bigger family.
Of course,
you
he's
been.
One, and as and they're both big families. So Teresa, yes. I think, was one of, I think 11, and her husband Paddy, my father-in-law, is one of 9. So you can imagine the size of the gathering. And and I loved again what you said around, I want to keep slowing it down, how for some people it was very much a, well, we knew that this was coming.
Yes.
It was a logic, it was it was practical, it whatever. And for some, it was emotion all the way.
Yeah.
You know, and you almost, it's incredible to be, as I say, on one level being in a conversation about a person, and yet there being such different, I mean, even now, you know, Andy, my husband and I will sit down, and I'm like, but this is not a logic thing. Grief doesn't fit in a box.
No,
it can
not.
Feel happy and sad. And I love, yes, again, what you said. So again, I just want to swing back where you said in a funeral, and I didn't mention earlier, I feel, you know, so blessed, Marion, that I may get emotional again, that you did my mum's funeral and did a superb job. And I can remember exactly what you said, where I can remember literally sobbing, because she had Andrea Bocelli playing, and I mean, that gets me every time.
Yeah.
Sobbing with sadness and yet laughing at the same time when you spoke about my mum, who was known as Queenie, and you know, would have been literally managing the whole thing if she'd been there. And of course she was.
Yeah.
So again, I just want to, for the purposes of people who are listening or watching, just remind people that often we have emotions and they're not in compartments. You can feel sad and happy.
Yeah.
You can feel relieved that somebody's journey or pain is over. And feel desperately lost.
Yeah, without them.
Without them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose, I mean, in your instance with your mum, I mean, I did have a connection there, because not just of what had gone before for us, but from my own experience with my own mum. And so that was part of that. I can remember my mum was in hospital and very, very sick. And I remember coming home and after one evening's visit and just breaking down and just saying, I can't bear to see her like this anymore. It's so awful watching her, but I don't want her to go.
Oh, I so know what that feels like.
I don't want her to go. I don't want her to go. And it was that crossing over stuff, and they're trying to hold it and understand what was going on. And constantly you'd come back to the point of, but you don't want her to live like this, do you? This isn't what life's about. That logic would keep poking its nose in the door, but actually the emotion was bigger than the logic in the end, and you had to let go of the sorrow and the sadness that you felt even before they actually died. It was there because you were watching it happen, where the body was changing and things were not thriving and flourishing in any sense of the word. Things were winding down. And so you were watching that, knowing that the end was going to come, but at the same time, this terrible pain about, I don't want to be without my mum, you know, I don't want her to go. And so there's that, always that tension, and particularly with a close relationship, and especially if it's been a good relationship. And sometimes, you know, there's other stories come in. If it's not been a very good relationship, you've got other issues to deal with, which do create emotion of maybe a different kind. And then there's guilt and shame because you haven't done the right thing, or there's anger because you think somebody else hasn't done the right thing. And, you know, there's all that stuff gets all jumbled up together.
I'm reminded, actually, as you speak, that for me, and we probably need to start wrapping it up, even though we're nowhere near where we were. There's more. I'm reminded for me that the grieving process, if I might describe it as that, which we could have a whole session on, actually.
Yeah, I think it's dead right.
We definitely could speak for a long time about grieving. For me, the grieving process, I might describe more as the surrendering process, for me, happens while they're still with you.
Yes.
You know, while you're observing a reality unfolding in front of you, which is, this is not the same person, the subtle changes, either in personality or in the body, that there is a sense moment to moment that things are going to be different. And for me, with both of our mums, there was a sense of the grieving, the surrendering happening while they were still with us.
Yeah.
To be able to move to a place where, as much sadness and pain as there was, we have to accept what is.
Yeah, that's right.
We have to accept
what is. And that's excuse me, that's more obvious when it's a death that has when a life has elements of dying processing through.
Yes.
It doesn't work like that when it's an accidental death.
Yes.
When it's totally unprepared and it's totally unexpected.
Yeah.
And that's a much tougher thing to come to terms with, because they were all right yesterday. They were all right this morning when they went off to do whatever they went off to do. And that's part of my own journey as well, with my own dad, who he was okay. He was looking forward to his retirement. And one night he got up in the middle of the night and said to my mum, "I'm not very comfortable and I'm keeping you awake. I'm just going to go sit in my chair." And so he sat in his chair and she found him in the morning. Gone. You know? And so she wasn't prepared for that. We weren't prepared for that. And that was, terrible. It was just an awful shock. And he wasn't old. He wasn't an old man. He was 64. I mean, today that's not considered to be very old. There are lots of other things like that. You know, I mean, he did at least have a natural death. He wasn't knocked down by a bus or something. But those are the kind of things that shock people to the core. And they don't know. They weren't expecting it. It wasn't any plan or anything that was drawing to a close. It's suddenly they were here one minute and gone the next.
You know, I love how you said that, because I'm also reminded of, you know, sometimes people talk about a good death, like,
yeah.
You know, and I am reminded, for example, you know, exactly what you said there. Sometimes, as painful as it is to watch somebody on that trajectory,
yes,
they're slowly passing away, and for some people it can be a long time. So I've supported somebody that had been like over 2 years. I mean, it can be really harrowing to watch. Exactly as you say, you can look at somebody else and go, "Oh, I can't imagine how painful it is to literally pick up the phone,
yeah,
and just hear the news." And so I often say to people, whatever the circumstances is, for me, there's no good or bad.
No, there isn't.
There just is. You know, is it better to be able to say your goodbyes and prepare?
Yeah.
Or is that harder than just poof, gone? I don't know. I've experienced both. I don't know.
The thing is that one of the conversations that I have had with people in the past is there is never a right time. Mm. Never, ever a right time, because there's always somebody to say, "Oh, what a shame they weren't here for Christmas," or, "What a shame they were 99, if only they'd reached 100. You know, there's always, "Oh, and they didn't get to see the new baby that was born 2 days after they died," or they didn't, whatever it is. There is never a right time in the eyes of those of us who are left. There's always a reason why. Oh, just a few more days would have made a difference.
We want more.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's bizarre, really. It is quite odd how we internalize all this stuff that's going on. But, oh, what a shame they didn't get to be 100. They would have had a letter from the Queen. I've heard that one, I don't know how many times, you know, as if it would have made a jot of difference, you know. But for them, it would have made a difference.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so, aware that, as I say, we definitely could do at least another one, if not five more. Is there anything that you either... anything you'd like to close with, either is there a funny story you'd like to end with, or anything that of wisdom you'd like to pass forward to people around dying or death?
I mean, obviously I come from a faith perspective. Obviously, I mean, that's what I do. And I think where you began, where you said about honouring the life of the person. And from my faith perspective, which I will just vocalize because I think it's important, because it's what helped me to be able to manage the issues that I had to deal with. I believe that we are made in the image of God, right? Each person is unique. Each person will reflect something of that image in the world. And it was my responsibility in the course of listening to the people who were there to determine or to identify what that image, how that image had been revealed within that family. Now, I couldn't have done that on my own. That's really what I'm trying to say to you. That was part of my faith experience, because I had to learn through prayer and spending time just reflecting on what people had given to me about how can I say to this family, this person is precious. This person is unique. I don't just have a responsibility to dispose of the body. I have a responsibility to reflect and to honour and respect the life that they had been given. And so that was my starting point always. This is a unique person. They have unique things that they have reflected in the world that nobody else could have done. And they were precious in the sight of God and in the sight, generally in the sight of their family, although that wasn't always the case, I have to say. And sometimes I would hear stories about a particular person that weren't pleasant, that weren't nice. They hadn't always been this glowing person that many people like to reflect at funerals. They liked, oh, they were the best person in the world, oh, they would have done anything for it, all that. But I would not deny that stuff either, because I would say that the course of life had not been kind to this person. And so the image that they were supposed to reflect in the world had got damaged and battered and bruised. And so it wasn't always evident, but it was there. And that's what I felt my role was. That's how I had to deal with it. Everybody's unique and everybody has something particular that they reflect in the world. And I found it in every case. There was always one little glimpse of something precious. And you'd think, oh, that is so special. And I would have to draw that to the attention of the people who were there. This person, not you, this person was able to be this kind of person in their life, you know. And even the ones that were pretty battered and bruised, they were little glimpses of a sparkling facet that nobody else would have noticed, but I was able to pick up on and just say, what about this in their life? And you could see this kind of coming over. Like, there was a guy who was an alcoholic. He'd given his family hell, absolute hell in their lives. He'd walked out on them in the end, or they'd kicked him out. I can't remember, but his family actually didn't want a lot to do with him. And as a result of that, he became a mentor for alcoholics. And he changed the lives of countless people. But his life was awful prior to him getting to the point where he could stop the booze. And his family, unfortunately, at that point, only remembered all the awful things. Mm. And I had to say, but what about this? Not everybody could have done this. He did. And there are people here today at this funeral who are here because of what he did for them. You know, and so you had to find it. You just had to find that little thing. And that was probably a bit startling for an example, but there were lots of things that people did that they had become so much a part of their lives that people just took it for granted. They didn't realize how exceptional it was and how special it was and how much help they had actually given other people in all kinds of indirect ways because of who they were.
And that reminds me of one of my favourite films of all time, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
where you really, in that film, you get to see, and if we take, we rub this person out, if we take this person out, all the lives that have been affected and have been touched in whatever the ways, good, bad, right,
that's
wrong,
right,
they've been touched. And what a beautiful way to close this by honouring a lifetime as a journey of a million or a trillion different touches.
Yeah.
And some days we do our best and some days it looks very different to that, but it's a life that's been lived. It's a, as I say, a trillion breaths that have been taken.
That's right.
And it feels really important to keep bringing this conversation about dying and death into our everyday narrative to honour.
That's right.
To honour that dying is a part of living.
Exactly that. And you cannot make a funeral nice, but you can make it memorable.
Well, on that, before I proper start to sob, thank you.
You're welcome.
Really, really thank you. I am beyond blessed to know you and the way you've touched our family. Some people won't know all of that story, but you are in my heart and all of my family's heart for what you've given to our family. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That winds up another Remarkable Women podcast, the monk and the minister talking about dying and death. So we'll say bye for now.
Okay. Bye for now, Nick. Thank you.